Chapter 11, Castle Rock. In the short chill of dawn, the four boys gathered round the black smudge where the fire had been, while Ralph knelt and blew. Grey, feathery ashes scurried hither and thither at his breath, but no spark shone among them. The twins watched anxiously, and Piggy sat expressionless behind the luminous wall of his myopia. Ralph continued to blow till his ears were singing with the effort, but then the first breeze of dawn took the job off his hands and blinded him with ashes. He squatted back, swore, and rubbed water out of his eyes. No use. Eric looked down at him through a mask of dried blood. Piggy peered in the general direction of Ralph. "Of course it's no use, Ralph. Now we got no fire." Ralph brought his face within a couple of feet of Piggy's. "Can you see me?"
"A bit."
Ralph allowed the swollen flap of his cheek to close his eye again.
"They've got our fire."
Rage shrilled his voice. "They stole it."
"That's them," said Piggy. "They blinded me. See? That's Jack Merridew. You call an assembly, Ralph. We got to decide what to do."
"An assembly for only us?"
"It's all we got.
Sam, let me hold on to you."
They went towards the platform.
"Blow the conch," said Piggy. "Blow as loud as you can." The forest re-echoed, and birds lifted, crying out of the treetops as on that first morning ages ago. Both ways the beach was deserted. Some little ones came from the shelters. Ralph sat down on the polished trunk, and the three others stood before him. He nodded, and Sam and Eric sat down on the right. Ralph pushed the conch into Piggy's hands. He held the shining thing carefully and blinked at Ralph.
"Go on, then."
"I just take the conch to say this. I can't see no more, and I got to get my glasses back. Awful things has been done on this island. I voted for you for chief. He's the only one who ever got anything done. So now you speak, Ralph, and tell us what... or else..." Piggy broke off, snivelling. Ralph took back the conch as he sat down. "Just an ordinary fire. You'd think we could do that, wouldn't you? Just a smoke signal so we can be rescued. Are we savages or what? Only now there's no signal going up. Ships may be passing. Do you remember how he went hunting and the fire went out and a ship passed by? And they all think he's best as chief. Then there was... That's his fault, too. If it hadn't been for him, it would never have happened. Now Piggy can't see, and they came stealing." Ralph's voice ran up. "At night, in darkness, and stole our fire. They stole it. We'd have given them fire if they'd asked, but they stole it. And the signal's out, and we can't ever be rescued. Don't you see what I mean? We'd have given them fire for themselves, only they stole it. I..." He paused lamely as the curtain flickered in his brain. Piggy held out his hands for the conch. "What are you going to do, Ralph? This is just talk without deciding. I want my glasses." "I'm trying to think. Supposing we go, looking like we used to, washed and hair brushed. After all, we aren't savages, really, and being rescued isn't a game." He opened the flap of his cheek and looked at the twins. "We could smarten up a bit and then go." "We ought to take spears," said Sam, "even Piggy. Because we may need them. You haven't got the conch." Piggy held up the shell. "You can take spears if you want, but I shan't. What's the good? I'll have to be led like a dog, anyhow. Yes, laugh. Go on, laugh. There's them on this island as would laugh at anything. And what happened? What's grown-ups going to think? Young Simon was murdered. And there was that other kid what had a mark on his face. Who's seen him since we first come here? Piggy, stop a minute. I got the conch. I'm going to that Jack Merridew and tell him I am. He'll get hurt. What can he do more than he has? I'll tell him what's what. You let me carry the conch, Ralph. I'll show him the one thing he hasn't got." Piggy paused for a moment and peered round at the dim figures. The shape of the old assembly trodden in the grass listened to him. "I'm going to him with this conch in my hands. I'm going to hold it out. Look, I'm going to say... you're stronger than I am, and you haven't got asthma. You can see, I'm going to say, and with both eyes.
But I don't ask for my glasses back, not as a favour. I don't ask you to be a sport, I'll say, not because you're strong, but because what's right's right. Give me my glasses, I'm going to say. You've got to. Piggy ended, flushed and trembling. He pushed the conch quickly into Ralph's hands, as though in a hurry to be rid of it, and wiped the tears from his eyes. The green light was gentle about them, and the conch lay at Ralph's feet, fragile and white. A single drop of water that had escaped Piggy's fingers now flashed on the delicate curve like a star. At last Ralph sat up straight and drew back his hair. All right. I mean, you can try it if you like. We'll go with you. He'll be painted, said Sam timidly. You know how he'll be. He won't think much of us. If he gets waxy, we've had it. Ralph scowled at Sam. Dimly he remembered something that Simon had said to him once by the rocks. Don't be silly, he said, and then he added quickly, Let's go. He held out the conch to Piggy, who flushed, this time with pride. You must carry it. When we're ready, I'll carry it. Piggy sought in his mind for words to convey his passionate willingness to carry the conch against all odds. I don't mind. I'll be glad, Ralph. Only I have to be led. Ralph put the conch back on the shining log. We better eat, and then get ready. They made their way to the devastated fruit trees. Piggy was helped to his food and found some by touch. While they ate, Ralph thought of the afternoon. We'll be like we were. We'll wash. Sam gulped down a mouthful and protested. But we bathe every day. Ralph looked at the filthy objects before him and sighed. We ought to comb our hair, only it's too long. I've got both socks left in the shelter, said Eric, so we could pull them over our heads like caps, sort of. We could find some stuff, said Piggy, and tie your hair back. Like a girl? No, of course not. Then we must go as we are, said Ralph, and they won't be any better. Eric made a detaining gesture. But they'll be painted, you know how it is. The others nodded. They understood only too well the liberation into savagery that the concealing paint brought. Well, we won't be painted, said Ralph, because we aren't savages. Sam and Eric looked at each other. All the same. Ralph shouted, No paint! He tried to remember. Smoke, he said. We want smoke. He turned on the twins fiercely. I said, Smoke! We've got to have smoke! There was silence, except for the multitudinous murmur of the bees. At last Piggy spoke kindly. Course we have, 'cause the smoke's a signal, and we can't be rescued if we don't have smoke. I knew that, shouted Ralph. He pulled his arm away from Piggy. Are you suggesting... I'm just saying what you always say, said Piggy hastily. I thought for a moment... I hadn't, said Ralph loudly. I knew it all the time. I hadn't forgotten. Piggy nodded propitiatingly. You're chief, Ralph. You remember everything. I hadn't forgotten. Of course not. The twins were examining Ralph curiously, as though they were seeing him for the first time. They set off along the beach in formation. Ralph went first, limping a little, his spear carried over one shoulder. He saw things partially through the tremble of the heat haze over the flashing sands, and his own long hair and injuries. Behind him came the twins, worried now for a while, but full of unquenchable vitality. They said little, but trailed the butts of their wooden spears, for Piggy had found that looking down, shielding his tired sight from the sun, he could just see these moving along the sand. He walked between the trailing butts, therefore, the conch held carefully between his two hands. The boys made a compact little group that moved over the beach, four plate-like shadows dancing and mingling beneath them. There was no sign left of the storm, and the beach was swept clean like a blade that has been scoured. The sky and the mountain were at an immense distance, shimmering in the heat, and the reef was lifted by mirage, floating in a kind of silver pool halfway up the sky. They passed the place where the tribe had danced. The charred sticks still lay on the rocks where the rain had quenched them, but the sand by the water was smooth again. They passed this in silence. No one doubted that the tribe would be found at the castle rock, and when they came in sight of it, they stopped with one accord. The densest tangle on the island, a mass of twisted stems, black and green and impenetrable, lay on their left, and tall grass swayed before them. Now Ralph went forward. Here was the crushed grass where they had all lain when he had gone to prospect. There was the neck of land, the ledge skirting the rock. Up there were the red pinnacles. Sam touched his arm. Smoke. There was a tiny smudge of smoke wavering into the air on the other side of the rock. Some fire, I don't think. Ralph turned. What are we hiding for? He stepped through the screen of grass onto the little open space that led to the narrow neck. You two follow behind. I'll go first, then Piggy a pace behind me. Keep your spears ready. Piggy peered anxiously into the luminous veil that hung between him and the world. Is it safe? Ain't there a cliff? I can hear the sea. You keep right close to me. Ralph moved forward onto the neck. He kicked a stone, and it bounded into the water. Then the sea sucked down, revealing a red, weedy square 40 feet beneath Ralph's left arm. Am I safe? Quavered Piggy. I feel awful. High above them, from the pinnacles, came a sudden shout, and then an imitation war cry that was answered by a dozen voices from behind the rock. Give me the conch and stay still. Halt! Who goes there? Ralph bent back his head and glimpsed Roger's dark face at the top. You can see who I am, he shouted. Stop being silly. He put the conch to his lips and began to blow. Savages appeared, painted out of recognition, edging round the ledge towards the neck. They carried spears and disposed themselves to defend the entrance. Ralph went on blowing and ignored Piggy's terrors. Roger was shouting, You mind out, see? At length Ralph took his lips away and paused to get his breath back. His first words were a gasp, but audible. Calling an assembly. The savages guarding the neck muttered among themselves, but made no motion. Ralph walked forward a couple of steps. A voice whispered urgently behind him, Don't leave me, Ralph. You kneel down, said Ralph sideways, and wait till I come back. He stood halfway along the neck and gazed at the savages intently. Freed by the paint, they had tied their hair back and were more comfortable than he was. Ralph made a resolution to tie his own back afterwards. Indeed, he felt like telling them to wait and doing it there and then, but that was impossible. The savages sniggered a bit, and one gestured at Ralph with his spear. High above, Roger took his hands off the lever and leaned out to see what was going on. The boys on the neck stood in a pool of their own shadow, diminished to shaggy heads. Piggy crouched, his back shapeless as a sack. I'm calling an assembly. Silence. Roger took up a small stone and flung it between the twins, aiming to miss. They started, and Sam only just kept his footing. Some source of power began to pulse in Roger's body. Ralph spoke again, loudly. I'm calling an assembly. He ran his eye over them. Where's Jack? A group of boys stirred and consulted. A painted face spoke with the voice of Robert. He's hunting, and he said we weren't to let you in. I've come to see about the fire, said Ralph, and about Piggy's specs. The group in front of him shifted, and laughter shivered outwards from among them, light, excited laughter that went echoing among the tall rocks. A voice spoke from behind Ralph. What do you want? The twins made a bolt past Ralph and got between him and the entry. He turned quickly. Jack, identifiable by personality and red hair, was advancing from the forest. A hunter crouched on either side. All three were masked in black and green. Behind them on the grass, the headless and paunched body of a sow lay where they had dropped it. Piggy wailed, Ralph, don't leave me! With ludicrous care, he embraced the rock, pressing himself to it above the sucking sea. The sniggering of the savages became a loud, derisive jeer. Jack shouted above the noise, You go away, Ralph. You keep to your end. This is my end and my tribe. You leave me alone. The jeering died away. You pinched Piggy's specs, said Ralph breathlessly. You've got to give them back. Got to? Who says? Ralph's temper blazed out. I say, you voted for me for chief. Didn't you hear the conch? You played a dirty trick. We'd have given you fire if you'd asked for it. The blood was flowing in his cheeks, and the bunged-up eye throbbed. You could have had fire whenever you wanted, but you didn't. You came sneaking up like a thief and stole Piggy's glasses. Say that again. Thief! Thief! Piggy screamed. Rolf, mind me! Jack made a rush and stabbed at Rolf's chest with his spear. Rolf sensed the position of the weapon from the glimpse he caught of Jack's arm and put the thrust aside with his own butt. Then he brought the end round and caught Jack a stinger across the ear. They were chest to chest, breathing fiercely, pushing and glaring. Who's a thief? You are. Jack wrenched free and swung at Rolf with his spear. By common consent, they were using the spears as sabres now, no longer daring the lethal points. The blow struck Rolf's spear and slid down to fall agonizingly on his fingers. Then they were apart once more, their positions reversed, Jack towards the castle rock, and Rolf on the outside towards the island. Both boys were breathing very heavily. Come on, then. Come on. Truculently, they squared up to each other, but kept just out of fighting distance. You come on and see what you get. You come on. Piggy, clutching the ground, was trying to attract Ralph's attention. Ralph moved, bent down, kept a wary eye on Jack. Ralph, remember what we came for. The fire, my specs. Ralph nodded. He relaxed his fighting muscles, stood easily and grounded the butt of his spear. Jack watched him inscrutably through his paint. Ralph glanced up at the pinnacles, then towards the group of savages. Listen, we've come to say this. First, you've got to give back Piggy's specs. If he hasn't got them, he can't see. You aren't playing the game. The tribe of painted savages giggled, and Ralph's mind faltered. He pushed his hair up and gazed at the green and black mask before him, trying to remember what Jack looked like. Piggy whispered. And the fire. Oh, yes. Then about the fire. I say this again. I've been saying it ever since we dropped in. He held out his spear and pointed at the savages. Your only hope is keeping a signal fire going as long as there's light to see. Then maybe a ship'll notice the smoke and come and rescue us and take us home. But without that smoke, we've got to wait till some ship comes by accident. We might wait years till we were old. The shivering, silvery, unreal laughter of the savages sprayed out and echoed away. A gust of rage shook Ralph. His voice cracked. Don't you understand, you painted fools? Sam, Eric, Piggy, and me, we aren't enough. We tried to keep the fire going, but we couldn't. And then you, playing at hunting. He pointed past them to where the trickle of smoke dispersed in the pearly air. Look at that. Call that a signal fire? That's a cooking fire. Now you'll eat, and there'll be no smoke. Don't you understand? There may be a ship out there. He paused, defeated by the silence and the painted anonymity of the group guarding the entry. The chief opened the pink mouth and addressed Sam and Eric, who were between him and his tribe. You two, get back. No one answered him. The twins, puzzled, looked at each other, while Piggy, reassured by the cessation of violence, stood up carefully. Jack glanced back at Ralph and then at the twins. Grab them. No one moved. Jack shouted angrily. I said, grab them. The painted group moved round Sam and Eric nervously and unhandily. Once more the silvery laughter scattered. Sam and Eric protested out of the heart of civilization. Oh, I say, honestly. Their spears were taken from them. Tie them up. Ralph cried out hopelessly against the black and green mask. Jack! Go on, tie them. Now the painted group felt the otherness of Sam and Eric, felt the power in their own hands. They felled the twins clumsily and excitedly. Jack was inspired. He knew that Ralph would attempt a rescue. He struck in a humming circle behind him, and Ralph only just parried the blow. Beyond them, the tribe and the twins were a loud and writhing heap. Piggy crouched again. Then the twins lay, astonished, and the tribe stood round them. Jack turned to Ralph and spoke between his teeth. See? They do what I want. There was silence again. The twins lay, inexpertly tied up, and the tribe watched Ralph to see what he would do. He numbered them through his fringe, glimpsed the ineffectual smoke. His temper broke. He screamed at Jack, "You're a beast and a swine and a bloody, bloody thief!" He charged. Jack, knowing this was the crisis, charged too. They met with a jolt and bunched apart. Jack swung with his fist at Ralph and caught him on the ear. Ralph hit Jack in the stomach and made him grunt. Then they were facing each other again, panting and furious, but unnerved by each other's ferocity. They became aware of the noise that was the background to this fight, the steady, shrill cheering of the tribe behind them. Piggy's voice penetrated to Ralph. "Let me speak." He was standing in the dust of the fight, and as the tribe saw his intention, the shrill cheer changed to a steady booing. Piggy held up the conch, and the booing sagged a little, then came up again to strength. "I got the conch," he shouted. "I tell you, I got the conch." Surprisingly, there was silence now. The tribe were curious to hear what amusing thing he might have to say. Silence and pause. But in the silence, a curious air noise close by Ralph's head. He gave it half his attention, and there it was again, a faint zoop. Someone was throwing stones. Roger was dropping them, his one hand still on the lever. Below him, Ralph was a shock of hair, and Piggy a bag of fat. "I got this to say. You're acting like a crowd of kids." The booing rose and died again as Piggy lifted the white magic shell. "Which is better, to be a pack of painted savages like you are, or to be sensible like Ralph is?" A great clamor arose among the savages. Piggy shouted again. "Which is better, to have rules and agree, or to hunt and kill?" Again the clamor, and again zup. Ralph shouted against the noise. "Which is better, law and rescue, or hunting and breaking things up?" Now Jack was yelling too, and Ralph could no longer make himself heard. Jack had backed right against the tribe, and there were a solid mass of menace that bristled with spears. The intention of a charge was forming among them. They were working up to it, and the neck would be swept clear. Ralph stood facing them, a little to one side, his spear ready. By him stood Piggy, still holding out the talisman, the fragile, shining beauty of the shell. The storm of sound beat at them, an incantation of hatred. High overhead, Roger, with a sense of delirious abandonment, leaned all his weight on the lever. Ralph heard the great rock long before he saw it. He was aware of a jolt in the earth that came to him through the soles of his feet, and the breaking sound of stones at the top of the cliff. Then the monstrous red thing bounded across the neck, and he flung himself flat while the tribe shrieked. The rock struck Piggy a glancing blow from chin to knee. The conch exploded into a thousand white fragments and ceased to exist. Piggy, saying nothing, with no time for even a grunt, travelled through the air sideways from the rock, turning over as he went. The rock bounded twice and was lost in the forest. Piggy fell 40 feet and landed on his back across that square red rock in the sea. His head opened and stuff came out and turned red. Piggy's arms and legs twitched a bit, like a pig's, after it has been killed. Then the sea breathed again in a long, slow sigh. The water boiled white and pink over the rock, and when it went, sucking back again, the body of Piggy was gone. This time the silence was complete. Ralph's lips formed a word, but no sound came. Suddenly Jack bounded out from the tribe and began screaming wildly. "See, see, that's what you'll get. I meant that. There isn't a tribe for you any more. The conch is gone." He ran forward, stooping. "I'm chief." Viciously, with full intention, he hurled his spear at Ralph. The point tore the skin and flesh over Ralph's ribs, then sheared off and fell in the water. Ralph stumbled, feeling not pain but panic, and the tribe, screaming now like the chief, began to advance. Another spear, a bent one that would not fly straight, went past his face, and one fell from on high where Roger was. The twins lay hidden behind the tribe, and the anonymous devil's faces swarmed across the neck. Ralph turned and ran. A great noise as of seagulls rose behind him. He obeyed an instinct that he did not know he possessed, and swerved over the open space so that the spears went wide. He saw the headless body of the sow, and jumped in time. Then he was crashing through foliage and small boughs and was hidden by the forest. The chief stopped by the pig, turned and held up his hands. "Back, back to the fort." Presently the tribe returned noisily to the neck where Roger joined them. The chief spoke to him angrily. "Why aren't you on watch?" Roger looked at him gravely. "I just came down." The hangman's horror clung round him. The chief said no more to him, but looked down at Sam and Eric. "You got to join the tribe." "You let me go, and me." The chief snatched one of the few spears that were left and poked Sam in the ribs. "What do you mean by it, eh?" said the chief fiercely. "What do you mean by coming with spears? What do you mean by not joining my tribe?" The prodding became rhythmic. Sam yelled. "That's not the way." Roger edged past the chief, only just avoiding pushing him with his shoulder. The yelling ceased, and Sam and Eric lay looking up in quiet terror. Roger advanced upon them as one wielding a nameless authority. Chapter 12. Cry of the Hunters. Ralph lay in a covert, wondering about his wounds. The bruised flesh was inches in diameter over his right ribs, with a swollen and bloody scar where the spear had hit him. His hair was full of dirt and tapped like the tendrils of a creeper. All over he was scratched and bruised from his flight through the forest. By the time his breathing was normal again, he had worked out that bathing these injuries would have to wait. How could you listen for naked feet if you were splashing in water? How could you be safe by the little stream or on the open beach? Ralph listened. He was not really far from the castle rock, and during the first panic he had thought he heard sounds of pursuit. But the hunters had only sneaked into the fringes of the greenery, retrieving spears perhaps, and then had rushed back to the sunny rock, as if terrified of the darkness under the leaves. He had even glimpsed one of them, striped brown, black, and red, and had judged that it was Bill. But really, thought Ralph, this was not Bill. This was a savage whose image refused to blend with that ancient picture of a boy in shorts and shirt. The afternoon died away. The circular spots of sunlight moved steadily over green fronds and brown fibre, but no sound came from behind the rock. At last Ralph wormed out of the ferns and sneaked forward to the edge of that impenetrable thicket that fronted the neck of land. He peered with elaborate caution between branches at the edge and could see Robert sitting on guard at the top of the cliff. He held a spear in his left hand and was tossing up a pebble and catching it again with the right. Behind him, a column of smoke rose thickly so that Ralph's nostrils flared and his mouth dribbled. He wiped his nose and mouth with the back of his hand, and for the first time since the morning felt hungry. The tribe must be sitting round the gutted pig, watching the fat ooze and burn among the ashes. They would be intent. Another figure, an unrecognizable one, appeared by Robert and gave him something, then turned and went back behind the rock. Robert laid his spear on the rock beside him and began to gnaw between his raised hands. So the feast was beginning, and the watchman had been given his portion. Ralph saw that for the time being he was safe. He limped away through the fruit trees, drawn by the thought of the poor food, yet bitter when he remembered the feast. Feast a day, and then tomorrow. He argued unconvincingly that they would let him alone, perhaps even make an outlaw of him. But then the fatal, unreasoning knowledge came to him again. The breaking of the conch and the deaths of Piggy and Simon lay over the island like a vapour. These painted savages would go further and further. Then there was that indefinable connection between himself and Jack, who therefore would never let him alone, never. He paused, sun-flecked, holding up a bough, prepared to duck under it. A spasm of terror set him shaking, and he cried aloud, "No, they're not as bad as that. It was an accident." He ducked under the bough, ran clumsily, then stopped and listened. He came to the smashed acres of fruit and ate greedily. He saw two little ones, and not having any idea of his own appearance, wondered why they screamed and ran. When he had eaten, he went towards the beach. The sunlight was slanting now into the palms by the wrecked shelter. There was the platform and the pool. The best thing to do was to ignore this leaden feeling about the heart and rely on their common sense, their daylight sanity. Now that the tribe had eaten, the thing to do was to try again. And anyway, he couldn't stay here all night in an empty shelter by the deserted platform. His flesh crept, and he shivered in the evening sun. No fire, no smoke, no rescue. He turned and limped away through the forest towards Jack's end of the island. The slanting sticks of sunlight were lost among the branches. At length he came to a clearing in the forest where rock prevented vegetation from growing. Now it was a pool of shadows, and Rolf nearly flung himself behind a tree when he saw something standing in the center. But then he saw that the white face was bone, and that the pig's skull grinned at him from the top of a stick. He walked slowly into the middle of the clearing, and looked steadily at the skull that gleamed as white as ever the conch had done, and seemed to jeer at him cynically. An inquisitive ant was busy in one of the eye sockets, but otherwise the thing was lifeless. Or was it? Little prickles of sensation ran up and down his back. He stood, the skull about on a level with his face, and held up his hair with two hands. The teeth grinned, the empty socket seemed to hold his gaze masterfully and without effort. What was it? The skull regarded Rolf like one who knows all the answers and won't tell. A sick fear and rage swept him. Fiercely he hit out at the filthy thing in front of him that bobbed like a toy and came back, still grinning, into his face, so that he lashed and cried out in loathing. And then he was licking his bruised knuckles and looking at the bare stick, while the skull lay in two pieces, its grin now 6 feet across. He wrenched the quivering stick from the crack and held it as a spear between him and the white pieces. Then he backed away, keeping his face to the skull that lay grinning at the sky. When the green glow had gone from the horizon and night was fully accomplished, Rolf came again to the thicket in front of the castle rock. Peeping through, he could see that the height was still occupied, and whoever it was up there had a spear at the ready. He knelt among the shadows and felt his isolation bitterly. They were savages, it was true, but they were human, and the ambushing fears of the deep night were coming on. Rolf moaned faintly. Tired though he was, he could not relax and fall into a well of sleep for fear of the tribe. Might it not be possible to walk boldly into the fort, say, "I've got packs," and laugh lightly and sleep among the others? Pretend they were still boys, schoolboys who had said, "Sir, yes, sir," and worn caps. Daylight might have answered yes, but darkness and the horrors of death said no. Lying there in the darkness, he knew he was an outcast. "'Cause I had some sense." He rubbed his cheek along his forearm, smelling the acrid scent of salt and sweat and the staleness of dirt. Over to the left, the waves of ocean were breathing, sucking down, then boiling back over the rock. There were sounds coming from behind the castle rock. Listening carefully, detaching his mind from the swing of the sea, Rolf could make out a familiar rhythm. Kill the beast, cut his throat, spill his blood. The tribe was dancing. Somewhere on the other side of this rocky wall, there would be a dark circle, a glowing fire, and meat. They would be savouring food and the comfort of safety. A noise nearer at hand made him quiver. Savages were clambering up the castle rock, right up to the top, and he could hear voices. He sneaked forward a few yards and saw the shape at the top of the rock change and enlarge. There were only two boys on the island who moved or talked like that. Rolf put his head down on his forearms and accepted this new fact like a wound. Sam and Eric were part of the tribe now. They were guarding the castle rock against him. There was no chance of rescuing them and building up an outlaw tribe at the other end of the island. Sam and Eric were savages like the rest. Piggy was dead, and the conch smashed to powder. At length the guard climbed down. The two that remained seemed nothing more than a dark extension of the rock. A star appeared behind them, and was momentarily eclipsed by some movement. Rolf edged forward, feeling his way over the uneven surface as though he were blind. There were miles of vague water at his right, and the restless ocean lay under his left hand, as awful as the shaft of a pit. Every minute the water breathed round the death rock and flowered into a field of whiteness. Ralph crawled until he found the ledge of the entry in his grasp. The lookouts were immediately above him, and he could see the end of a spear projecting over the rock. He called very gently, "Sam and Eric." There was no reply. To Carey he must speak louder, and this would rouse those striped and inimical creatures from their feasting by the fire. He set his teeth and started to climb, finding the holds by touch. The stick that had supported a skull hampered him, but he would not be parted from his only weapon. He was nearly level with the twins before he spoke again. "Sam and Eric." He heard a cry and a flurry from the rock. The twins had grabbed each other and were gibbering. "It's me, Ralph." Terrified that they would run and give the alarm, he hauled himself up until his head and shoulders stuck over the top. Far below his armpit, he saw the luminous flowering round the rock. "It's only me, Ralph." At length they bent forward and peered into his face. "We thought it was. We didn't know what it was. We thought..." Memory of their new and shameful loyalty came to them. Eric was silent, but Sam tried to do his duty. "You've got to go, Ralph. You go away now." He wagged his spear and essayed fierceness. "You shove off, see?" Eric nodded agreement and jabbed his spear in the air. Ralph leaned on his arms and did not go. "I came to see you two." His voice was thick. His throat was hurting him now, though it had received no wound. "I came to see you too." Words could not express the dull pain of these things. He fell silent, while the vivid stars were spilt and danced always. Sam shifted uneasily. "Honest, Ralph, you better go." Ralph looked up again. "You two aren't painted. How can you? If it were light..." If it were light, shame would burn them at admitting these things. But the night was dark. Eric took up, and then the twins started their antiphonal speech. "You've got to go because it's not safe. They made us. They hurt us." "Who? Jack?" "Oh, no." They bent to him and lowered their voices. "Push off, Ralph. It's a tribe. They made us. We couldn't help it." When Ralph spoke again, his voice was low and seemed breathless. "What have I done? I liked him. I wanted us to be rescued." Again the stars spilled about the sky. Eric shook his head earnestly. "Listen, Ralph, never mind what sense. That's gone. Never mind about the chief. You've got to go for your own good. The chief and Roger. Yes, Roger. They hate you, Ralph. They're going to do you. They're going to hunt you tomorrow." "But why?" "I don't know. And, Ralph, Jack the chief says it'll be dangerous, and we've got to be careful and throw our spears like at a pig. We're going to spread out in a line across the island. We're going forward from this end until we find you. We got to give signals like this." Eric raised his head and achieved a faint ululation by beating on his open mouth. Then he glanced behind him nervously. "Like that, only louder, of course." "But I've done nothing," whispered Ralph urgently. "I only wanted to keep up a fire." He paused for a moment, thinking miserably of the morrow. A matter of overwhelming importance occurred to him. "What are you..." He could not bring himself to be specific at first, but then fear and loneliness goaded him. "When they find me, what are they going to do?" The twins were silent. Beneath him, the death rock flowered again. "What are they... Oh, God, I'm hungry." The towering rock seemed to sway under him. "Well, what?" The twins answered his question indirectly. "You've got to go now, Ralph, for your own good. Keep away as far as you can. Won't you come with me? Three of us, we'd stand a chance." After a moment's silence, Sam spoke in a strangled voice. "You don't know Roger. He's a terror. And the chief, they're both terrors. Only Roger..." Both boys froze. Someone was climbing towards them from the tribe. "He's coming to see if we're keeping watch. Quick, Ralph." As he prepared to let himself down the cliff, Ralph snatched at the last possible advantage to be wrung out of this meeting. "I'll lie up close. "In that thicket down there," he whispered, "so keep them away from it. They'll never think to look so close." The footsteps were still some distance away. "Sam, I'm going to be all right, aren't I?" The twins were silent again. "Here," said Sam suddenly, "take this." Ralph felt a chunk of meat pushed against him and grabbed it. "But what are you going to do when you catch me?"
Silence above. He sounded silly to himself. He lowered himself down the rock.
"What are you going to do?"
From the top of the towering rock came the incomprehensible reply. "Roger sharpened a stick at both ends." Roger sharpened a stick at both ends. Ralph tried to attach a meaning to this, but could not. He used all the bad words he could think of in a fit of temper that passed into yawning. How long could you go without sleep? He yearned for a bed and sheets. But the only whiteness here was the slow spilt milk, luminous round the rock 40 feet below where Piggy had fallen. Piggy was everywhere, was on this neck, was become terrible in darkness and death. If Piggy were to come back now out of the water with his empty head... Ralph whimpered and yawned like a little un. The stick in his hand became a crutch on which he reeled. Then he tensed again. There were voices raised on the top of the castle rock. Sam and Eric were arguing with someone, but the ferns and the grass were near. That was the place to be in, hidden, and next to the thicket that would serve for tomorrow's hideout. Here, and his hands touched grass, was a place to be in for the night, not far from the tribe, so that even if the horrors of the supernatural emerged, one could at least mix with humans for the time being, even if it meant... What did it mean? A stick sharpened at both ends. What was there in that? They had thrown spears and missed, all but one. Perhaps they would miss next time, too. He squatted down in the tall grass, remembered the meat that Sam had given him, and began to tear at it ravenously. While he was eating, he heard fresh noises, cries of pain from Sam and Eric, cries of panic, angry voices. What did it mean? Someone beside himself was in trouble, for at least one of the twins was catching it. Then the voices passed away down the rock, and he ceased to think of them. He felt with his hands and found cool, delicate fronds backed against the thicket. Here, then, was the night's lair. At first light he would creep into the thicket, squeeze between the twisted stems, ensconce himself so deep that only a crawler like himself could come through, and that crawler would be jabbed. There he would sit, and the search would pass him by, and the cordon waver on, ululating along the island, and he would be free. He pulled himself between the ferns, tunneling in. He laid the stick beside him and huddled himself down in the blackness. One must remember to wake at first light in order to diddle the savages. And he did not know how quickly sleep came and hurled him down a dark interior slope. He was awake before his eyes were open, listening to a noise that was near. He opened an eye, found the mould an inch or so from his face, and his fingers gripped into it, light filtering between the fronds of fern. He had just time to realize that the age-long nightmares of falling and death were past and that the morning was come when he heard the sound again. It was an ululation over by the seashore, and now the next savage answered, and the next. The cry swept by him across the narrow end of the island, from sea to lagoon, like the cry of a flying bird. He took no time to consider, but grabbed his sharp stick and wriggled back among the ferns. Within seconds he was worming his way into the thicket, but not before he had glimpsed the legs of a savage coming towards him. The ferns were thumped and beaten, and he heard legs moving in the long grass. The savage, whoever he was, ululated twice, and the cry was repeated in both directions, then died away. Ralph crouched still, tangled in the mid-brake, and for a time he heard nothing. At last he examined the brake itself. Certainly no one could attack him here, and moreover he had a stroke of luck. The great rock that had killed Piggy had bounded into this thicket and bounced there, right in the centre, making a smashed space a few feet in extent each way. When Ralph had wriggled into this, he felt secure and clever. He sat down carefully among the smashed stems and waited for the hunt to pass. Looking up between the leaves, he caught a glimpse of something red.
That must be the top of the Castle Rock, distant and unmenacing. He composed himself triumphantly to hear the sounds of the hunt dying away. Yet no one made a sound, and as the minutes passed in the green shade, his feeling of triumph faded. At last he heard a voice, Jack's voice, but hushed. "Are you certain?" The savage addressed said nothing. Perhaps he made a gesture. Roger spoke. "If you're fooling us..." Immediately after this there came a gasp and a squeal of pain. Ralph crouched instinctively. One of the twins was there, outside the thicket, with Jack and Roger. "You're sure he meant in there?" The twin moaned faintly and then squealed again. "He meant he'd hide in there? Yes, yes, oh!" Silvery laughter scattered among the trees. So they knew. Ralph picked up his stick and prepared for battle. But what could they do? It would take them a week to break a path through the thicket, and anyone who wormed his way in would be helpless. He felt the point of his spear with his thumb and grinned without amusement. Whoever tried that would be stuck, squealing like a pig. They were going away, back to the Tower Rock. He could hear feet moving, and then someone sniggered. There came again that high, bird-like cry that swept along the line. So some were still watching for him. But some? There was a long, breathless silence. Ralph found that he had bark in his mouth from the gnawed spear. He stood and peered upwards to the Castle Rock. As he did so, he heard Jack's voice from the top. "Heave! Heave! Heave!" The red rock that he could see at the top of the cliff vanished like a curtain, and he could see figures and blue sky. A moment later the earth jolted, there was a rushing sound in the air, and the top of the thicket was cuffed as with a gigantic hand. The rock bounded on, thumping and smashing towards the beach, while a shower of broken twigs and leaves fell on him. Beyond the thicket the tribe was cheering. Silence again. Ralph put his fingers in his mouth and bit them. There was only one other rock up there that they might conceivably move, but that was half as big as a cottage, big as a car, a tank. He visualized its probable progress with agonizing clearness. That one would start slowly, drop from ledge to ledge, trundle across the neck like an outsized steam roller. Heave, heave, heave. Ralph put down his spear, then picked it up again. He pushed his hair back irritably, took two hasty steps across the little space, and then came back. He stood looking at the broken ends of branches. Still silence. He caught sight of the rise and fall of his diaphragm and was surprised to see how quickly he was breathing. Just left of center, his heartbeats were visible. He put the spear down again. Heave, heave, heave. A shrill, prolonged cheer. Something boomed up on the red rock, and then the earth jumped and began to shake steadily, while the noises steadily increased. Ralph was shot into the air, thrown down, dashed against branches. At his right hand, and only a few feet away, the whole thicket bent, and the roots screamed as they came out of the earth together. He saw something red that turned over slowly as a mill wheel. Then the red thing was past, and the elephantine progress diminished towards the sea. Ralph knelt on the ploughed-up soil and waited for the earth to come back. Presently the white broken stumps, the split sticks, and the tangle of the thicket refocused. There was a kind of heavy feeling in his body where he had watched his own pulse. Silence again. Yet not entirely so. They were whispering out there, and suddenly the branches were shaken furiously at two places on his right. The pointed end of a stick appeared. In panic, Ralph thrust his own stick through the crack and struck with all his might. Ah! His spear twisted a little in his hands, and then he withdrew it again. Oh! Someone was moaning outside, and a babble of voices rose. A fierce argument was going on, and the wounded savage kept groaning. Then, when there was silence, a single voice spoke, and Ralph decided that it was not Jack's. "See? I told you. He's dangerous." The wounded savage moaned again. What else? What next?
Ralph fastened his hands round the chewed spear, and his hair fell. Someone was muttering only a few yards away towards the castle rock. He heard a savage say, "No!" in a shocked voice, and then there was suppressed laughter. He squatted back on his heels and showed his teeth at the wall of branches. He raised his spear, snarled a little, and waited. Once more the invisible group sniggered. He heard a curious trickling sound, and then a louder crepitation, as if someone were unwrapping great sheets of cellophane. A stick snapped, and he stifled a cough. Smoke was seeping through the branches in white and yellow wisps. The patch of blue sky overhead turned to the colour of a storm cloud, and then the smoke billowed round him. Someone laughed excitedly, and a voice shouted, "Smoke!" He wormed his way through the thicket towards the forest, keeping as far as possible beneath the smoke. Presently he saw open space and the green leaves of the thicket. A smallish savage was standing between him and the rest of the forest, a savage striped red and white and carrying a spear. He was coughing and smearing the paint about his eyes with the back of his hand as he tried to see through the increasing smoke. Ralph launched himself like a cat, stabbed, snarling with a spear, and the savage doubled up. Then there was a shout from beyond the thicket, and then Ralph was running with a swiftness of fear through the undergrowth. He came to a pig run, followed it for perhaps 100 yards, and then swerved off. Behind him, the ululation swept across the island once more, and a single voice shouted 3 times. He guessed that was a signal to advance, and sped away again, till his chest was like fire. Then he flung himself down under a bush, and waited for a moment till his breathing steadied. He passed his tongue tentatively over his teeth and lips, and heard far off the ululation of the pursuers. There were many things he could do. He could climb a tree, but that was putting all his eggs in one basket. If he were detected, they had nothing more difficult to do than wait. If only one had time to think. Another double cry at the same distance gave him a clue to their plan. Any savage balked in the forest would utter the double shout and hold up the line till he was free again. That way they might hope to keep the cordon unbroken right across the island. Ralph thought of the boar that had broken through them with such ease. If necessary, when the chase came too close, he could charge the cordon while it was still thin, burst through, and run back. But run back where? The cordon would turn and sweep again. Sooner or later he would have to sleep or eat, and then he would awaken with hands clawing at him, and the hunt would become a running down. What was to be done then? The tree? Burst the line like a boar? Either way, the choice was terrible. A single cry quickened his heartbeat, and leaping up, he dashed away towards the ocean side and the thick jungle till he was hung up among creepers. He stayed there for a moment with his calves quivering. If only one could have Pax, a long pause, a time to think. There again, shrill and inevitable, was the ululation sweeping across the island. At that sound he shied like a horse among the creepers, and ran once more till he was panting. He flung himself down by some ferns. The tree or the charge? He mastered his breathing for a moment, wiped his mouth, and told himself to be calm. Sam and Eric were somewhere in that line, and hating it. Or were they? And supposing instead of them he met the chief, or Roger, who carried death in his hands. Ralph pushed back his tangled hair and wiped the sweat out of his best eye. He spoke aloud. Think. What was the sensible thing to do? There was no piggy to talk sense. There was no solemn assembly for debate, nor dignity of the conch. Think. Most, he was beginning to dread the curtain that might waver in his brain, blacking out the sense of danger, making a simpleton of him. A third idea would be to hide so well that the advancing line would pass without discovering him. He jerked his head off the ground and listened. There was another noise to attend to now, a deep grumbling noise as though the forest itself were angry with him, a somber noise across which the ululations were scribbled excruciatingly as on a slate. He knew he had heard it before somewhere, but had no time to remember. Break the line, a tree. Hide and let them pass. A nearer cry stood him on his feet, and immediately he was away again, running fast among thorns and brambles. Suddenly he blundered into the open, found himself again in that open space, and there was the fathom-wide grin of the skull, no longer ridiculing a deep blue patch of sky, but jeering up into a blanket of smoke. Then Rolf was running beneath trees, with a grumble of the forest explained. They had smoked him out and set the island on fire. Hide was better than a tree, because you had a chance of breaking the line if you were discovered. Hide, then. He wondered if a pig would agree and grimaced at nothing. Find the deepest thicket, the darkest hole on the island, and creep in. Now, as he ran, he peered about him. Bars and splashes of sunlight flitted over him, and sweat made glistening streaks on his dirty body. The cries were far now, and faint. At last he found what seemed to him the right place, though the decision was desperate. Here bushes and a wild tangle of creeper made a mat that kept out all the light of the sun. Beneath it was a space perhaps a foot high, though it was pierced everywhere by parallel and rising stems. If you wormed into the middle of that, you would be 5 yards from the edge and hidden unless the savage chose to lie down and look for you. And even then you would be in darkness. And if the worst happened and he saw you, then you had a chance to burst out at him, fling the whole line out of step and double back. Cautiously, his stick trailing behind him, Rolf wormed between the rising stems. When he reached the middle of the mat, he lay and listened. The fire was a big one, and the drum roll that he had thought was left so far behind was nearer. Couldn't a fire outrun a galloping horse? He could see the sun-splashed ground over an area of perhaps 50 yards from where he lay, and as he watched, the sunlight in every patch blinked at him. This was so like the curtain that flapped in his brain that for a moment he thought the blinking was inside him. But then the patches blinked more rapidly, dulled, and went out, so that he saw that a great heaviness of smoke lay between the island and the sun. If anyone peered under the bushes and chanced to glimpse human flesh, it might be Sam and Eric, who would pretend not to see and say nothing. He laid his cheek against the chocolate-coloured earth, licked his dry lips, and closed his eyes. Under the thicket, the earth was vibrating very slightly, or perhaps there was a sound beneath the obvious thunder of the fire and scribbled ululations that was too low to hear. Someone cried out. Rolf jerked his cheek off the earth and looked into the dulled light. They must be near now, he thought, and his chest began to thump. Hide, break the line, climb a tree. Which was the best after all? The trouble was you only had one chance. Now the fire was nearer. Those volleying shots were great limbs, trunks even, bursting. The fools, the fools. The fire must be almost at the fruit trees. What would they eat tomorrow? Rolf stirred restlessly in his narrow bed. One chance, nothing. What could they do? Beat him? So what? Kill him? A stick sharpened at both ends. The cries suddenly nearer jerked him up. He could see a striped savage moving hastily out of a green tangle and coming towards the mat where he hid, a savage who carried a spear. Rolf gripped his fingers into the earth. Be ready now, in case. Rolf fumbled to hold his spear so that it was point foremost. And now he saw that the stick was sharpened at both ends. The savage stopped 15 yards away and uttered his cry. Perhaps he can hear my heart over the noises of the fire. Don't scream. Get ready. The savage moved forward so that you could only see him from the waist down. That was the butt of his spear. Now you could see him from the knee down. Don't scream. A herd of pigs came squealing out of the greenery behind the savage and rushed away into the forest. Birds were screaming, mice shrieking, and a little hopping thing came under the mat and cowered. 5 yards away, the savage stopped, standing right by the thicket, and cried out. Rolf drew his feet up and crouched. The stake was in his hands, the stake sharpened at both ends, the stake that vibrated so wildly, that grew long, short, light, heavy, light again. The ululation spread from shore to shore. The savage knelt down by the edge of the thicket, and there were lights flickering in the forest behind him. You could see a knee disturb the mould. Now the other. Two hands. A spear. A face. The savage peered into the obscurity beneath the thicket. You could tell that he saw light on this side and on that, but not in the middle, there. In the middle was a blob of dark, and the savage wrinkled up his face, trying to decipher the darkness. The seconds lengthened. Ralph was looking straight into the savage's eyes. "Don't scream. You'll get back. Now he's seen you. He's making sure." The stick sharpened. Ralph screamed. A scream of fright and anger and desperation. His legs straightened. The screams became continuous and foaming. He shot forward, burst the thicket, was in the open, screaming, snarling, bloody. He swung the stake and the savage tumbled over. But there were others coming towards him, crying out. He swerved as a spear flew past and then was silent, running. All at once, the lights flickering ahead of him merged together, and the roar of the forest rose to thunder, and a tall bush directly in his path burst into a great fan-shaped flame. He swung to the right, running desperately fast, with the heat beating on his left side and the fire racing forward like a tide. The ululation rose behind him and spread along, a series of short, sharp cries, the sighting call. A brown figure showed up at his right and fell away. They were all running, all crying out madly. He could hear them crashing in the undergrowth, and on the left was the hot, bright thunder of the fire. He forgot his wounds, his hunger and thirst, and became fear, hopeless fear, on flying feet, rushing through the forest towards the open beach. Spots jumped before his eyes and turned into red circles that expanded quickly till they passed out of sight. Below him, someone's legs were getting tired, and the desperate ululation advanced like a jagged fringe of menace and was almost overhead. He stumbled over a root, and the cry that pursued him rose even higher. He saw a shelter burst into flames, and the fire flapped at his right shoulder, and there was the glitter of water. Then he was down, rolling over and over in the warm sand, crouching with arm up to ward off, trying to cry for mercy. He staggered to his feet, tensed for more terrors, and looked up at a huge peaked cap. It was a white-topped cap, and above the green shade of the peak was a crown, an anchor, gold foliage. He saw white drill, epaulettes, a revolver, a row of gilt buttons down the front of a uniform. A naval officer stood on the sand, looking down at Ralph in wary astonishment. On the beach behind him was a cutter, her bows hauled up and held by two ratings. In the stern sheets, another rating held a submachine gun. The ululation faltered and died away. The officer looked at Ralph doubtfully for a moment, then took his hand away from the butt of the revolver. "Hello." Squirming a little, conscious of his filthy appearance, Ralph answered shyly, "Hello." The officer nodded as if a question had been answered. "Are there any adults, any grown-ups with you?" Dumbly, Ralph shook his head. He turned a half pace on the sand. A semicircle of little boys, their bodies streaked with coloured clay, sharp sticks in their hands, were standing on the beach, making no noise at all. "Fun and games," said the officer. The fire reached the coconut palms by the beach and swallowed them noisily. A flame, seemingly detached, swung like an acrobat and licked up the palm heads on the platform. The sky was black. The officer grinned cheerfully at Ralph. "We saw your smoke. What have you been doing, having a war or something?" Ralph nodded. The officer inspected the little scarecrow in front of him. The kid needed a bath, a haircut, a nose wipe, and a good deal of ointment. "Nobody killed, I hope. Any dead bodies?" "Only two, and they've gone." The officer leaned down and looked closely at Ralph. "Two? Killed?" Ralph nodded again. Behind him, the whole island was shuddering with flame. The officer knew as a rule when people were telling the truth. He whistled softly. Other boys were appearing now, tiny tots, some of them, brown with the distended bellies of small savages. One of them came close to the officer and looked up. "I'm... But there was no more to come. Percival Weems Madison sought in his head for an incantation that had faded clean away. The officer turned back to Ralph. "We'll take you off. How many of you are there?" Ralph shook his head. The officer looked past him to the group of painted boys. "Who's boss here?" "I am," said Ralph loudly. A little boy who wore the remains of an extraordinary black cap on his red hair, and who carried the remains of a pair of spectacles at his waist, started forward, then changed his mind, and stood still. "We saw your smoke, and you don't know how many of you there are?"
"No, sir."
"I should have thought," said the officer, as he visualized the search before him, "I should have thought that a pack of British boys, you're all British, aren't you, would have been able to put up a better show than that. I mean..."
"It was like that at first," said Ralph. "Before things..." He stopped.
"We were together then?"
The officer nodded helpfully.
"I know. Jolly good show. Like the Coral Island."
Ralph looked at him dumbly.
For a moment he had a fleeting picture of the strange glamour that had once invested the beaches. But the island was scorched up like dead wood. Simon was dead, and Jack had... The tears began to flow, and sobs shook him. He gave himself up to them now for the first time on the island. Great shuddering spasms of grief that seemed to wrench his whole body. His voice rose under the black smoke, before the burning wreckage of the island, and infected by that emotion, the other little boys began to shake and sob too. And in the middle of them, with filthy body, matted hair, an unwiped nose, Ralph wept for the end of innocence, the darkness of man's heart, and the fall through the air of the true, wise friend called Piggy. The officer, surrounded by these noises, was moved and a little embarrassed. He turned away to give them time to pull themselves together, and waited, allowing his eyes to rest on the trim cruiser in the distance. About how I wrote the story, I had very vividly in my mind two pictures. One, and I suppose this is the kind of thing one probably remembers from one's own youth, I don't know, or I may have been thinking of my own children, or I may have seen somebody else's. One is the picture of the little boy who discovers that he actually is on a coral island, because all little boys, or at least all little boys I know, when they play Let's Pretend, the idea of being shipwrecked on an island by themselves, this is fascinating. They think this is fine, because you see, that's a game you can stop any moment you want. And this picture was of the little boy who actually found he was on a coral island, and he was so delighted he stood on his head. And this is one of the ways small boys show they're delighted. They stand on their head and waggle their feet in the air. And that was one picture, and the other picture was of this same little boy crying his heart out, more or less, because he discovered what actually went on, what people were like in society when you don't have law. I think, really, perhaps you could say the most important thing said in the book is when Jack says, "Bollocks to the rules, why should we obey the rules, and why should we bother about the rules?" And Ralph says, "Because the rules are the only thing we've got." That really is, I suppose you could say, what the book is about. If you don't have rules, that is to say, if you don't have law, then you're lost, you're finished, you're gone. There were those two pictures, the contrasting pictures, and the story had to move from the one to the other. The little boy who stood on his head for sheer pleasure in being on a desert island, he had to move from that position to this other one of grief, because he knew what was inside people and what could come out of them. There have been so many interpretations of the story that I'm not going to choose between them. Make your own choice. They contradict each other, the various choices. The only choice that really matters, the only interpretation of the story, if you want one, is your own. Not your teacher's, not your professor's, not mine, not a critic's, not some authority's. The only thing that matters is first the experience
of being in the story, moving through it, then any interpretation you like, if it's yours, then that's the right one. Because what's in a book is not what an author thought he put into it, it's what the reader gets out of it.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Lord of the Flies by William Golding. Text copyright 1954 by William Golding. Production copyright 1977. Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.